All right, you're back in the DFSR here with our NFL podcast for Friday, December 29th. I'm Doug Norrie. That is
James Davis.
And we're from DailyFantasySportsRankings.com or DFSR.com for short. So go check out a free 3-day trial of our projection system powered by Lineup Lab. That's DFSR.com/NBA. Optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings NFL, NBA as well. Base projections for hockey are all set to go under one subscription package. So go check that out. We got one last week of football, buddy. Week 17 in the NFL. I was going to say it was a labor of love for you, but I'm not even sure that's the right description.
I love getting into figuring out the tiebreakers, who goes where, you know, who's got something to play for, who doesn't, who's going to sit their starters anyway because they're assumed they're going to win. It's just, it is, I mean, the labor of love is to do it a disservice, Doug. It's a passion of mine.
This is a crazy week. So if for some reason you're just coming into DFS in week 17, I don't know how that could even possibly be the case, but week 7, even for those, the initiated and the uninitiated alike have to realize that this week, NFL in general is a very high variance sport just because there's, you know, this one thing, especially in the FanDuel scoring, this one thing, touchdowns, is weighted so highly that if you don't get it, you can take pretty wild swings. It's a little not as bad on DraftKings because of the PPR aspect and there's no kicker and stuff like that. But football is still, of all the sports, and baseball's up there with the home runs, very high variance. This week, though, it takes it to a new level of just uncertainty around certain teams. So we're going to go through these game by game and try and discuss and break down, you know, relatively quickly where we think teams stand, where they do actually stand in the playoff picture, where some injuries are coming and creeping their heads up, where teams are resting. There's a lot to get to. If we were to miss something here, I'm going to plead just a little forgiveness on that because, or ask for a little forgiveness because we've gone through this with a pretty fine tooth comb, and that's still, there's just a ton of injury and team information out there. So it might be tough to cover it all, but I think we do a pretty comprehensive job here. So we'll go through game by game, talk about where maybe you can make some lineups, what might be considered to be the safest guys for cash this week, with just the little asterisk that it's week 17 and we're into all bets are off territories to some degree. So let's take a look at some of these games. So the first one we have here is Chicago and Minnesota. Minnesota is a -11.5 favorite. We'll go through each game. When we do it, I'll just ask real quick, you can give your opinion, but we'll also just say playoff implications or not. Are there playoff implications clearly not for Chicago, but for Minnesota in this game?
Yeah, there are kind of playoff implications for Minnesota in that if they lose and Carolina wins, they could lose the 2 seed and lose home field advantage. So it's tough to imagine Minnesota not playing here because basically it's like trading a first round playoff game against Chicago with the first round playoff game against a real team who's actually going to make the playoffs. So I think that they'll go out there and try to win this game.
Okay, so with that being said, do we like, you know, they're big favorites here. The defense is obviously very good. I mean, do for cash game purposes, guys like Keenum, we want to turn to Latavius Murray, maybe in a running back situation where they're running downhill, and the wide receivers are some guys that we've targeted this season. Do you like anyone from Minnesota?
Yeah, I think there's some playable guys here. I think Murray is still interesting. He's kind of underpriced in those games where he does get 20-plus carries, and the last two games have been those. Now, he got the 20 carries against Green Bay, but he stunk, only turned him into 69 yards. Chicago should be a more generous rushing defense here. I still think there's probably better options at running back. Like, you know, we'll get to some guys who have had their situation freed up based on injury stuff, and, you know, just some big-name running backs that are still good values. But yeah, Murray, I wouldn't be surprised to see some cash ownership, and I think it's probably fine.
I think you could probably consider their defense here. Chicago is just a really bad team. Oh, yeah. It's at home. The Vikings are a pretty good defense. We have them right now ranked third overall in terms of just raw points, and actually that will probably, the Steelers will probably come down as for reasons that we will talk about later. But I think that overall Vikings, they're very expensive, but this is a good spot, I think, to pay up for their defense. I mean, on Chicago side, we targeted Kendall Wright in the past. That didn't come to complete fruition, although there were some weather concerns last week. Do you see the Bears still kind of fighting through this game? You mentioned, we talked about this on air. Maybe you can elaborate this for some of these teams where you said, well, it doesn't seem like some team. Talk about the teams that care or don't care, I guess, because I thought you put
sure, it. Yeah, well, I'll break down. So I broke this down in our DFSR cash game article this week. So if you head on over to the site, DFSR.com, and click on NFL, you'll see my cash game article at the top. But basically, I divide teams into 5 different tiers. So there's tier one and tiers in order of the way I would want to target them for cash game reasons this week. Tier one are teams with a ton on the line. These are teams playing for either a first round bye or for just making the playoffs in general. And we can break that down when we get to each team that's doing that. Tier two, and so Minnesota actually qualifies as a tier one team because they are playing for that first round bye. Tier two are teams playing for playoff seeding or maybe divisional titles, but who are locked into the playoffs. So that's like New England, Pittsburgh, New Orleans, and the Rams. It's turned out most of those teams have elected already to sit their guys, although we could see New Orleans, I think, play their guys just because, you know, not only home field just means so much to them, and the divisional title, I think, is a little bit more meaningful than just jockeying for seeding, especially in rather unlikely circumstances. Then there's the next tier, and this is the tier that Chicago lands in, which is that teams with obviously nothing to play for, but they haven't had anything to play for in ages. So, like, what's the difference last week when they were mathematically eliminated from the playoffs and this week when they're still mathematically eliminated? It seems like it'd be a little disingenuous for those teams to all of a sudden rest guys. Like, is Cleveland just going to be like, you know what, guys, Duke Johnson, you're not going out there, buddy. We got to save you for next year, you know?
Right.
So I think Chicago, just as it relates here, is I think we can assume that they're just going to play their guys unless we hear otherwise. And then there are teams playing for like moral victories. And sometimes these teams will just openly give up. Like, I think Detroit might be leaning in this direction, but and I'm specifically talking about the moral victory of a 500 season. I think that does mean something to fans. I think it means something to teams, especially teams playing at home. It'd be a pretty big kick in the teeth to your fans to have them come out for the final game of the season and just watch you rest all the starters and lose on purpose to go 7-9. And then there's the last tier, which are teams that were recently eliminated or totally locked into their spot. And so, you know, I edge some of those teams that, you know, kind of had heartbreaking losses, like Dallas, for instance, in this direction a little bit. But the teams that are locked in their playoff spots right now, we'll get to as well. But it's Jacksonville, Philly, and Kansas City. Those guys can't move at all, so there's really no reason for them to go all out. And those teams are already talking about resting their players. So, yeah, I'll point this out when it's relevant as we go through, but that's kind of the lens that we're seeing through things this week.
Yeah, and I think that was a fantastic way to sum that up. I think this is a week two where, you know, you not that you can trust Vegas, but Vegas has a pretty good beat on this when it comes to like just where teams sort of fall in terms of just like where betting lines are. So, you know, and we've already seen like massive swings in lines, so we can talk about that too. So Vegas is another one we can sort of lean on them for just overall. Especially when news came out after lines were set, how much, you know, those players were valued or how much the teams are still stand to kind of like try to win or lose. So let's keep rolling through some of these games. You mentioned Detroit. They play at home against Green Bay. They're -6.5 favorites. Playoff implications here at all or anything we like from two teams that, especially for Green Bay, it looks like they're pretty banged up. We'll get to some of the injury stuff. What are you seeing in this game?
Yeah, they're division rivals trying to play for a 500 record. That's pretty much all the implications here. Both these teams are eliminated from the playoffs at this juncture. So basically, it's you just try to look at last week and try to figure out if they're going to replicate things this week. I'd say on the Green Bay side of the ball, I don't see how they can rest more players than they're already resting. Like if Rodgers isn't going to play and Adams probably isn't going to play and Nelson isn't going to play, like it's not like they're going to save Michael Clark and Lance Kendricks for next season. So I suspect the guys like Clark and Kendricks are pretty reasonable plays this week. We've learned this any number of times that trusting a 1 week sample size on these out of nowhere ball catchers is very, very risky. That being said, Kendricks in particular is the minimum price on both sites. And I think he's even like sub the minimum on DraftKings, maybe 2,700 over there. And he does have some track record of being able to catch balls. 9 targets last week, turned that into just 4 catches against Minnesota. So nothing super inspiring, doesn't feel like a must play by any stretch, but was getting some target share prior to that too. And then 5 targets against Cleveland. So I think Kendricks is somewhat playable. Everyone else on the Green Bay side, I mean, maybe you stick your neck out on Brett Hundley, but man, that might be a risky one too, just because his price has come up just a little bit. And, you know, he comes and goes, man. Like he had 46 pass attempts against Cleveland, turned that into 26 fantasy points. So that's amazing. And then he had 40 against Minnesota and turned it into 8 fantasy points. You know, kind of comes and goes. He does run the ball though. So if you like that increased floor and you're looking to take a stab on one of these cheap quarterbacks, I do think he's a reasonable option.
Yeah, just another. So you mentioned Nelson is doubtful. Adams is already out. It looks like Aaron Jones is doubtful as well. Only matters if you thought Jamal Williams was going to just go back to seeing all those carries, and it's still just not a very good matchup. It's just still not a very good matchup.
I don't think it matters much.
And then on the Detroit side of the ball, I mean, the pass catchers are guys that we've talked about in the past. You really can't target their running game at all. I mean, any interest in guys like Tate or Jones, Ebron, these guys for the Detroit passing game?
Yeah, Ebron's the guy I think I'm looking at just because tight end's pretty thin this week, especially with some of the big teams, you know, like New England not being willing to play their guys. Ebron, the last 3 weeks, 8, 7, and 11 targets, and he's turned that into double-digit fantasy points in each of those weeks. So I think Ebron's highly playable. I think Tate and Jones are a little too volatile for me, especially given that Green Bay has or Detroit has nothing really to play for, and they just haven't been very good. So I just don't know why. Like in their similar price ranges, I think you could just find better value. Both these guys are over 7,000 on FanDuel, and in each of the last 2 weeks, you could combine their fantasy points and not get there. So no, I'm not touching anyone else on Detroit.
Dallas goes in and plays the Eagles. Now, this one I find interesting. So the Eagles started as a -1 favorite, and then the line swung to Dallas at -3. But it looks like Nick Foles is going to play. According to the last note that I saw, it says Nick Foles is going to play. I think maybe this line had swung that he wasn't going to play. I'm very confused about what we think is going to happen in this game, or if it even matters. Like, I'm not even also just like not fully convinced that it matters one way or the other. And like, Vegas clearly thinks that the Eagles are going to rest like everybody, right? Like that would be.
And they simultaneously think that Dallas is really going to try hard too. And I think when you take those two factors into consideration together, basically the only guy this matters for is Ezekiel Elliott. And the question you ask yourself is this the guy I want to pay up for this week? And in a lot of games, you know, there are a lot of teams with a lot on the line. And so if you compare him heads up against, say, LeSean McCoy, whose team is playing for this first playoff berth in ages, and yeah, there's, I guess, an outside chance. It's not like they're a strict winning in, I don't believe. I could be wrong about that, but I don't believe they're a strict winning in. So do you want to take Zeke over a guy like LeSean McCoy, given that the Cowboys do have next season to play for and they probably have a pretty quick trigger finger? Or do you just want to say, hey, the Cowboys, they got eliminated last week, but they missed Elliott all season. They were happy to play, give him 25 touches last week. So, you know, that'll continue here. I tend to think Vegas probably has a better beat on this than we do. So if Vegas favors Dallas, then I think the Dallas guys will play. But yeah, I think one still wants to exercise caution here.
Yeah, I tend to agree with that. The line is still pretty low at only 21 implied points for the Cowboys, 18 for the Eagles. So they're, even if we thought they had a good beat on this, they're not expecting much to happen. Basically, the whole Dallas receiver core is questionable. Dez came out the other day and just said he'd been playing hurt all season long, like that, which is completely nuts to me. I mean, Dallas is a complete mess. And then the Eagles, you really can't. Even if you thought they were going to run Foles out there, they're already a tough team to target in fantasy just because they spread the ball around a lot. And it's like, it would just be completely insane for us to consider them to run out there for the entire game leading into the playoffs. I think the Foles thing is only meant to make sure he stays, just gets a little bit more work leading into the playoffs. If this was Wentz clearly would sit. I think Foles only is playing to probably just like keep up the speed of the game sort of stuff leading into the playoffs, because they're also going to take a week off. Washington goes in and plays the Giants. No playoff implications in this one. Washington is a -3 favorite. Now I'm wondering what you think about this. Right now, Kirk Cousins is coming in, I think, our top rated quarterback on the week at over 20 points. Giants defense obviously terrible. We feel comfortable playing Cousins just straight up in cash this week for a Washington team that is not playing for anything.
Yeah, it's hard to say. I mean, they weren't playing for anything last week. Cousins was very good from a fantasy perspective against a very tough Denver defense, and now he's coming in and playing one of the worst overall defenses in the league in the Giants. The last time they met, Cousins was not super spectacular. Attempted 31 passes, completed 19 for 242 yards and 2 touchdowns. So fine on these prices, but yeah, nothing to write home about. It's tricky. I mean, the question one you just have to ask yourself is, do I want to play a quarterback? Do I want to play anyone, given that we have 8 or 9 teams this week actually playing for someone? Do I want to invest a big portion of my salary in a guy whose team might just decide, yeah, whatever, dude, you know, like we're up by 10 right, going into halftime. Do I want to sit a guy? So that's really, you know, it's going to be the devil's bargain across all these guys this week. And I'm not sure. I'm just not sure at this point if it's possible to construct a lineup without any speculative plays. But if it is, then I think Cousins does make a pretty reasonable option. I mean, their run game is totally in shambles, both with injury and just ineffective play. So I think, you know, you take all that together and Cousins could have a really good week.
Yeah, my concern here with Cousins is like what you said in terms of the uncertainty around how much effort is going to be put in. And also just the line is very low here for a Giants team that's just been awful on defense all year, ranking in the bottom third in terms of DVOA, basically 25th against the pass, 24th against the rush. Yeah, they rank 28th, so he's below the bottom third. Is that the Redskins are only favored to put up around somewhere around 21 points. So that has me a little concerned about why that's so low. And I think that might speak to the uncertainty around what the overall effort's going to be. And like you said, Washington is just completely, but they're just playing with like they're a second team at this point. Like they don't, it just seems like they just,
bottom, yeah.
right? They've been playing just completely, just gotten demolished by injuries this season. On the Giants side, some of these cheap wide receivers are guys we've targeted in the past. Anything you like here as maybe a punt play? Eli Manning, looks like it's going to be Eli Manning's probably last game as a Giant.
Yeah, I think there's a couple good options on the Giants, actually. Roger Lewis, we've seen now three straight weeks with double-digit targets. Turn that into varying levels of success. Like, he and Manning haven't done a great job connecting. Last 2 weeks, 21 targets and just 8 receptions out of that. But so cheap and getting double-digit targets from, you know, not the worst quarterback in the league, and Manning is certainly worth something. And I don't know, and my gut tells me it's worth more than 5,100, even if you are taking on some risk. And then there's Rhett Ellison. We know the Giants have favored the tight end all season long. Ellison stepped in for Ingram last week, had 7 targets, 4 catches for 60 yards. So pretty effective performance. And we have seen him be targeted in the past too. He had 5 targets in the Dallas game on December 10th. So I think that both these guys are pretty reasonable options. If I had to, you know, put a gun to my head and decide on one, I'd say Roger Lewis is probably the better option. But in a week with not a lot of great tight end options, once again, Ellison, sure, totally playable.
Yeah, and Lewis only 3,600 on DraftKings. So if you think the target share is real,
you probably got to play him. I mean,
yeah, I mean, he's coming into almost all the lineups right now. Now, there are going to be a lot of cheap speculative plays this week, but at 3,600, if you think he's anywhere close to double digit targets, or even like eight or nine targets, is probably enough to sustain that kind of price. I think our projection on him is probably a little bullish, but I think overall still looks like a pretty strong play. Moving through into Houston and the Colts. Colts are -5.5 favorites, which says probably more about the Houston side of the ball here than anything else. These teams are not playing for anything, but is there still value to be had in a game where we maybe understand at least what the team's plans are, if we assume that it hasn't changed because their role toward or move toward the playoffs hasn't changed really because they stink?
Yeah, I'm not going to touch Houston. I don't think I'm very concerned about the Andre Hopkins news. Otherwise, this would be a pretty good spot for him. They also messed around a little bit in the running game last week. I don't know if you saw, but Alfred Blue went from 12 carries against Jacksonville. He had 16 carries last week against Pittsburgh. So maybe, I guess, if you think that's going to continue, or if you think that, you know, they're just moving away from Lamar Miller, maybe that's a direction you can go in. Blue now out-carried Miller in each of those last two games, but it looks kind of like a timeshare to me, even if Blue has been a little bit more effective. And then on the Indianapolis side, I mean, we've seen some guys get some significant target share recently. Hilton now has 2 weeks where he combined for 19 targets, 11 catches, and 141 yards. That's pretty decent on his price point. I mean, he's in that 6,000s range now, where we're used to having to take kind of speculative backup wide receivers. So if you think that's legit, then Hilton's a play. And then Jack Doyle, you know, he's been a DFS darling a few times this season. The last 2 weeks, he had 8 and 10 targets respectively in pretty tough matchups. So definitely another guy who's on the short list of tight ends I'd consider this week.
They still give the ball to Frank Gore for reasons a little bit unknown, but he got 17 carries last week and is still only 4,400 on DraftKings. So there's probably going to be, and will catch the occasional ball out of the backfield as well. Probably there will be more value at running back, just because there's going to be some injury situation stuff that we haven't really discussed yet. And that being said, Frank Gore is just been a guy that's kind of just sniffed around value at times this season without, he's just completely ancient. Moving into a game that does have some significance here. The Jets go in and play New England. New England is -14.5 favorites. Now, that line has actually come down since the open. I think it opened at -16.5 and is now down to 14.5. So, I mean, some movement, nothing really completely overwhelming, although I'm seeing it 16.5 some other places. So there's some conflict about what it is. New England has the highest implied total of any team this week at 30. And let's just start with them. Playoff implications for them, and where do we want to possibly target some Patriot guys?
Yeah, if they win, they get the one seed. So I think they will probably try to win. The question will be, how much effort will they need to exert in order to win? And I think that's really the tricky part here. We do know that Pittsburgh as well. Well, we don't know. There's rumors that Pittsburgh isn't going to be playing their top guys, which makes New England getting the one seed even more likely, because they could lose and Pittsburgh could lose and they would still get it just based on the tiebreaker. So I think that New England guys are modestly interesting, but ultimately probably too risky for me personally. I mean, they're all kind of at all-time high prices. You could play guys like Deion Lewis. He had huge ownership last week. He was excellent against Buffalo. He got a ton of touches, 29 touches overall, and 2 touchdowns, even if they were kind of in garbage time. So yeah, it's a weird spot. I would say suspect that a lot of people will play Deion Lewis again this week. And, you know, it is the Jets. There's a chance that New England wants to just go out there and step on their neck, but there's also a chance they exercise caution too. So I'm very curious to see where Lewis's ownership winds up.
The first half is going to tell the story here, because if they're winning by a lot, then you're going to see a lot more Mike Gillisley and some other stuff in the second half, so as they just try to get like out alive. Now, if the game is close, though, for whatever reason, and it's really hard to imagine it being close, but stranger things and all with the NFL. The NFL has proven time and time again that like bad teams at times can just hang because of the way that the nature, especially that it seems like it's happened a lot this season. I'm sure it's happened. I'm sure it happens equally every year, but just I've maybe been more tuned into it this season. But bad teams at times can just hang with the teams because you just need a couple things to go your way. So I think with Lewis, my gut is that he is very highly owned. If I take that back, because there's still a little bit of injury news out there. Of all the running backs, with he seems like he's up there in the group of guys that like we can kind of trust, because there's just enough of a narrative around them wanting to win. They have a good matchup, and he's coming off a week where he was obviously just one of the best. I'm not getting Burkhead back again this week. So I think from that point of view, I not that I would completely prioritize him, but he would be in that very upper tier of guys that I'd want to look to. And then the other one I'm wondering your opinion about here is Gronk. I mean, we have Gronk clearly as the tight end to play just because he's Gronk and he's great. And he's by far the highest overall projected guy we have, because there's some of these other guys have either bad matchups or questions. Would we feel okay playing him in cash at 8,500? Very expensive, but I mean, seems like the best tight end option.
Yeah, I mean, certainly on a raw points basis, he's without a doubt the tight end option. The real question, I mean, it's just if you think these guys are going to play, then you should play them. And if you don't, or if you think it's concerning, then you don't. And, you know, basically one has to assign a percentage chance that these guys don't play their full set of snaps and then run the calculations from there. My guess is if the chance is even 10% or something, then they're probably not plays. And that just also means that 90% of the time, if everyone else plays them, then you just get screwed. So that's really the risk. I don't unfortunately have a better answer than that. I think it just comes down to the individual person's guess as to whether New England goes out for the whole game or if they just play a half.
My gut is that New England is the cash game played to target this week. That just seems like it's going to be the case. They just seem, or at least like that's you want to be probably a little more outsized on this team than the others. Now, one of the reasons that this is the case is this next game, Cleveland and Pittsburgh. Now, there was news that came out yesterday that's not completely confirmed, that the Steelers are planning on sitting Roethlisberger and Bell this week, as they just say there's just no chance New England's going to lose. And why bother running these guys out there if they're not going to, the chance of getting hurt, if we win, it's not going to matter. Now, Tomlin has not confirmed that news as of right now. We're recording this at 10 o'clock in the morning on Friday. So without Tomlin recording this news or confirming the news, even without it being confirmed, Vegas sure thinks it's going to happen, because the line dropped from like -14 to -7 basically overnight once that was announced. So I think Vegas sees this as a situation where they aren't going to play. Would we want to target anything on the Steelers? Let's say they're not going to play. Is there anything we can even think about like punting with on the Steelers at this point, or would this be just a total stay away?
Yeah, I don't think you want to stick your neck out on any of even the backup wide receivers, just because, you know, Juju Smith-Schuster and Martavis Bryant, I think they both have a role to play in this playoffs coming up here. And it would be pretty surprising to me if Pittsburgh said, you know, especially given that they've already lost Antonio Brown, like these guys, you know, being the fill-ins are pretty indispensable to them. So it'd be pretty surprising if, you know, again, if they're going this direction of potentially sitting guys, if those guys got any run at all. Bell is priced to the point where he just needs to get, like, most of the reason his price is so high is because of the outsized opportunity. If that decreases even by 10% or something, he's not even close to a play, even in a pretty good matchup here. And let's remember too, when these two teams played on the first game of the season, and Bell was just garbage against Cleveland. And Cleveland has gone on to be, we've gone on to see that Bell is still Le'Veon Bell, and that Cleveland never really turned around from being a good running defense. So I don't think I'm looking for a ton of value here. If Bell were to sit, then maybe we can think about whoever the backup is, if they're even on FanDuel and DraftKings or
Stephen Ridley, who got 9 carries last week, isn't even on FanDuel. Like, he's not even in the FanDuel player pool.
So you'd have to think that he'd probably get the carries, and in which case there's no value. So in Cleveland, I mean, just forget about it. There's just nothing over there either. So yeah, this game might be a full on for the first time all season. The Pittsburgh game might be a skip.
Saving us from ourselves. I like it. So all right. So before we get into these, then the 4 o'clock games, hit us up with a sponsor.
Sure. Let's talk about NoHalftime.com. NoHalftime is a great app for people who like to do one-on-one daily fantasy sports challenges. Might be, frankly, a great option for you this week if you just don't feel like wading through the quagmire and trying to figure out who's going to play, who isn't, and trying to, you know, suss all that out on a full salary cap game format. NoHalftime, you could just pick one player who you know is going to get his carries this week. And actually, you can pit him up against some of the more speculative plays. So maybe like LeSean McCoy, and you're going to take him against, I don't know, Deion Lewis, who knows. So anyways, go on over to NoHalftime.com, download the app, use promo code DFSR. You can get a 50% bonus up to $50 on your first overall deposit. Issue one-on-one challenges yourself or come through the app and see what other challenges people have put out there. A very uncomplicated, very gratifying way to play DFS. So go check them out and tell them we sent you.
NFL did a great job this week of scheduling all the games. So the teams that looked like they were being pitted against each other for playoff seating, the timing lines up really well, or the timing lines up exactly. So you can't just like, can't have an advantage.
Don't they do that every year?
I didn't think they did. I think this is the first year they made sure, because like this year they had scheduled a night game for Sunday and then canceled it and moved it to the afternoon. Yeah. So I think that alone told me that they weren't really I'm positive they had thought about that the season before. So I'm fine to be wrong about it. Either way, they did do it for this week, and so we are going to get some playoff implications on this later slate of games, which should make things pretty interesting. Arizona goes in and takes on Seattle. Seattle playing at home here, -9.5 favorites. Do they have anything to play for? And if they do, are we going back to the Russell Wilson well, which we've been down for better or for worse at times, a lot of times this season?
Yeah, Seattle can make the playoffs. I mean, last week they won what was basically a playoff game against Dallas. It's obviously a must-win situation for them here. I'd be really surprising to see them anything other than play all their guys the maximum possible minutes. And in situations like that, I tend to like running quarterbacks, actually. We'll talk about Cam, I assume, really shortly here. But I tend to like quarterbacks that can run, because there's some amount of teams saving their guys who are runners, because you don't want to just like get them hurt in the middle of the season on some random third down play against the Giants. But given that everything is on the line, I think you will see Wilson just kind of go all out. That being said, we know what going all out looked like last week against Dallas. It meant 21 pass attempts for 93 yards, and he did have the 9 carries on the ground, so that was, you know, kind of confirms my suspicions. But man, I'll tell you what, these running quarterbacks have really done a number on us this season with their inability to pass sometimes. So yeah, I think Wilson is going to be trying his best. I think he'll be out there the whole game. I think he'll have more carries than usual, but if he's going to have 30 or fewer pass attempts, it still makes it tough for him to be a value.
Yeah, it's crazy. He's been so bad over the last 2 weeks. Now, they clearly got just completely waxed by the Rams 2 weeks ago, and then he just looked, I mean, just looked so bad. I don't know if it's a full season of having to just carry the team completely on his shoulders, which right. He's done. He's run for his life all season long. Their offensive line is horrible. They've had no running game. He's had to do it all. I don't know if that's finally taking a toll. I don't know if it's just it's just kind of running bad for two, no pun intended, running bad for 2 weeks, and then we see a return. I mean, this guy is still the highest overall fantasy scoring quarterback in the season, and it's not close. Even with two really bad weeks in a row, still no other non-injured quarterback. I mean, Wentz and Watson would be up in the discussion, if not ahead of him, if they had just played whole seasons. But after him, the next closest guy is Alex Smith, and he's like 30 points behind. So then it really starts falling off a cliff after that. Like we can, I mean, it's been such a crazy year that Wentz is still the fourth one. He's missed multiple weeks and he's still fourth in terms of overall scoring. Yeah, I think so. From that point of view, I almost like want to prioritize Wilson here for cash games, because we've seen him just have an incredibly high floor. And at the same time, I'm just a little bit I'm a little bit bugged by these last 2 weeks, because it seems they're just so bad. So it's if in the end, if you had to rank him in terms of like how strongly you felt for cash game, let's assume that like price is not going to matter this week, because there's just going to be lots of cheap options we can choose from, right? I think that's going to be, I think that's going to be the case. If you had to prioritize just overall quarterbacks here, would you rank him first? I mean, if your fantasy life depended on it this week, which quarterback do you think you would feel most comfortable just going out there and just doing it price independent?
It'd probably be Cam Newton, honestly. Carolina.
Oh boy, yeah. got a little Jamesy clone on the thing here. Got to do a couple checks to make sure this is actually you.
Because so you're referencing a show, Alias, which most people haven't watched, and then a joke that you and your wife had about one of the obscure clones of one of the characters, and when she acted unusually, that's how they knew that she was a clone of herself. So just to catch everyone up, I know probably a lot of you guys know Doug's jokes inside and out the same way I do, but just now you're all caught up on that one. I think it would be Cam Newton. I mean, because I guess I'm not seeing what the fundamental differences are between Newton and Wilson, other than Newton is passing more and running more. So I think I'll just take him. I get a cheaper price tag. I get a fairly reasonable matchup against Atlanta here. Atlanta's obviously playing for a ton too, but that game just has all the trappings of a team that's just going to go absolutely all out. So I think I'd like Newton. I also could consider Drew Brees. I mean, I know this isn't the cash game podcast, but New Orleans also playing for their division title against a terrible passing defense at Tampa Bay. So I think there's a couple options. I just don't think I know I don't want to be one of these victims of small sample size, but I do believe in opportunity. And I think the 4 weeks in a row now where the maximum number of passes Wilson has is 31. That is not the same profile of the guy who is putting up most of these huge fantasy totals during the season, passing 37 to 41 times a game. So you're going to take away a third of a guy's passing attempts. I think you're going to see less fantasy production. And I think that makes him less exciting to me.
One last note on Wilson here before we move on, and we'll start talking about that Wilson Cam game. I don't love him, but I want to just point out three things. And so the Dallas game is really concerning. The three games before that, Jacksonville is number two in DVOA. The Eagles are number five in DVOA, and the Rams are six in DVOA. So like he's run into a buzzsaw of 3 weeks in a row of just really bad matchups for that. Now Dallas does not include that, and he was really bad. So that kind of does do away with my point a little bit, but he ran into as bad of a 3 week stretch that you can basically get in terms of opponent defenses. So just maybe something to keep in the mind. And then you look at the Dallas game, and you think, well, that doesn't help the old case. All right. You mentioned Cam here. The next game we have on the list is the Carolina going in and playing Atlanta. Give us the playoff implications here. You already made a pretty strong case for Cam, I think, in terms of cash games. And then what else is there to like about this game?
Yeah, I think it's the most meaningful game of the week. I mean, both Carolina and Atlanta have a ton on the line here. They're going to be playing all their guys to the absolute maximum level of their capability to try to win, I would guess. I guess there's some outside chance Carolina just says screw it, because I guess it's modestly unlikely that they win and Minnesota loses. And there might even be other factors that need to happen for them to get the two seed, but it'd be pretty tough for I guess they'll know, actually, right? Yeah, darn. Yeah, so the Minnesota-Chicago game is at 1 o'clock, so they didn't quite hit this one on the head. Yeah, so I guess they'll know. And if they're already eliminated, we could see Carolina duck out. So I take back what I said about Cam being the guy.
Carolina is locked in. You mean duck out because they're already in the playoffs. I think they're just worried about seeding.
Well, they're already in the playoffs. What I'm saying is, though, yeah, because the way it normally works, right, is that the first round bye is so crucial because basically you just get to play your playoff game now, or you get to play it twice. But, you know, like you can, and in Minnesota's case, like they can play against Chicago for their first playoff game. And if they lose, then they get another chance against whoever they wind up playing in the playoffs. But if Minnesota wins that game, then Carolina, I believe, would be locked into their spot and wouldn't have any more mobility. Although, yeah, I'd have to look that up because I think there actually is a chance that they're up against someone for a division title. Nonetheless, it's just very, very complicated. Actually, if you give me 1 second, I can pull this up very quickly.
Well, while you're doing that, I will say, just to talk about some of the opportunity here for Carolina, they are looking, getting pretty thin at wide receiver at this point. Now, I think Funchess is going to play this week. It was pretty bad last week, but between he and Olsen, if you think that Carolina is going to be going all out, they're already going to be without Bird. I guess Brendan Burson was there last week and he got some targets, but the core group of guys would be Funchess, Olsen, and I guess Christian McCaffrey, who is, again, for 2 or 3 weeks in a row has led them in touches in terms of running back touches. So you can bring us up to speed on where Carolina stands here, but I think that if you think that they're going to go all out, there are a lot of fantasy viable guys, at least on the Carolina side.
Yeah, I think that sounds right. So yeah, looking at this, they are playing for the division title up against New Orleans. They could go as low as the 5 seed and as high as the 2 seed. So there is a lot of mobility. If Minnesota wins, then they'll be eliminated from the 2 seed. So they'd just be basically going between the 3 and the 6. The 3 and the 5 seed, that matters for a first round home game, but it doesn't matter so much that the team might not bow out. So just know that you probably are taking on some level of risk with Carolina. Atlanta, on the other hand, is playing for everything. If they lose and Seattle wins, they are out, and I think they want to make the playoffs. So you can expect to see the full complement of guys from Atlanta, such as they are, which unfortunately means that running back by committee will be out there in full force. Both Freeman and Coleman probably should see significant carries here. Julio Jones right now is listed as questionable with his thumb injury, and was seen wincing and that kind of thing. Now he's got a little ankle issue that he's dealing with, but I would be shocked if you saw anything other than him being out there for the whole game, and I would guess 10 plus targets. So I think he's a reasonable option. I mean, the big issue with Jones is that sometimes he can get 10, 8 targets and still stink. So I don't know. I suspect he'll see a lot of ownership this week in what amounts to a pretty reasonable matchup with Carolina, especially if you think that, you know, just like there's downside risk with Carolina if Minnesota wins their game early, there's also upside risk on the other side for Atlanta if Minnesota wins early, because then presumably Carolina would have a little bit less on the line. So, yeah, it's a very, very complicated week. I think you trust the Atlanta guys here, and then you take the Carolina guys with a slight grain of salt.
Yeah, I suspect Julio will see another week where he has the highest overall yards prop, and there's going to be weeks where he just destroys you on that, because, you know, he was good last week. He still hasn't caught a touchdown in 4 weeks. Was still good on the yards. Pretty much got there on the yards last week. He completely crushed you against Tampa Bay, where he caught three balls for 54 yards. He did not catch, only 5 catches for 98 against New Orleans, so that destroys you. And then the game against Minnesota, obviously had 2 catches for 24 yards, and then we go back to Tampa Bay, where he set the world on fire. So I think you do see Jones as a pretty, I suspect, just because the narrative behind this game, he is something of a play, and I'm still just concerned that we're just not going to get that kind of vintage Julio Jones. I don't think that guy's coming back through the door. You mentioned New Orleans as having something to play for. They are -7 favorites going into Tampa Bay. You know, how do we feel about them? This game has the highest overall, I believe it has the highest over under of the week. And they don't have the highest implied total, just because the game's a little closer than the New England one. But how do we like possibly targeting some of these Saints guys, and where do they stand in the playoffs?
I love Drew Brees this week. It's really hard to imagine him being anything other than just a really good value at 8,200 in a game that they must win and in a matchup with such a bad defense. That being said, Brees has also seen some limited opportunity recently, particularly as they get down and close, where they've just been dumping off to both Ingram and Kamara. So this is pretty troubling. But in the 10 games since October, basically, Brees has only topped 20 fantasy points twice this season, and that is really not very good. And obviously, they had plenty to play for in all those weeks as well. So, right. You're taking on some level of risk with Brees. He's also cheap, and if you think, you know, I actually, my gut tells me he's still run a little bit bad in terms of touchdowns, just because he's seen a lot of ownership across, you know, or not a lot of ownership, a lot of opportunity throughout the rest of the game. And there's been kind of these, like, you know, 9-yard rushes in and that kind of thing. And in football, we're still dealing with small sample sizes, even over a 10-game sample size from time to time. But that's obviously not without risk. I think you'll probably be on somewhat of an island playing him, just because, you know, there's other good quarterback options. And then on the running back side, I have not played Alvin Kamara nor recommended it any times this season, but the increase in target share over the last couple of weeks has me feeling pretty interested here, I think. So he's still getting those 12 carries a game. He's not turning them into 9 yards a carry, so pat myself on the back for that call. He's actually been quite bad on the ground recently, but he's also like 3/4 of a good wide receiver too. 7 and 9 targets the last 2 weeks, turning those into 6 and 7 receptions for an average of 52 yards. And that's good, you know, when you can just start the game with 9 fantasy points through the air. You don't have to do a whole lot on the ground to get the rest of the way there. So throwing the great matchup with Tampa Bay, and I think he is a consideration. And then the last guy is Michael Thomas. I mean, he has gone a similar way to Brees, where it's kind of tough for him to do a ton when so much is happening on the ground. But he's been quite effective the last few weeks too, and very cheap and a great matchup. So I think there are a lot of different guys who could see big ownership, and I think it sounds good.
Yeah, I think you summed up pretty well. There's the Saints are really, they've been an interesting fantasy team all season. Obviously, you know, with the Brees, the dip in Brees has really just come at the expense of they're so good at running the ball that they just haven't need to rely on him at all. Like, yeah. They're so dominant on the ground, and they're all just kind of expensive now too. So because they are just basically they run the entire team through those three offensive guys, and not in terms of Kamara, Ingram, and Thomas. On the Tampa Bay side of the ball, you made something of a case for Mike Evans, which I kind of like. The system's very high on him this week. Do you like it with the Lattimore thing? And what's your case here for Evans?
Yeah, so the case here, I think, generally speaking, is DeSean Jackson is still questionable. We did see increased target share for Evans last week. Well, not super increased, but 8 in the last 2 weeks in relatively tough matchups, as opposed to the 5 and 6 prior to that. And right now he's 54 yards, I think, off a 1,000-yard season. If he started his career with 4 straight 1,000-yard seasons, he'd be like the 3rd receiver ever to do that. And that's been kind of something buzzing around the Tampa Bay media. He was asked that question in a press conference, and he was like, oh, yeah, no, I really want to get that. So I think with Tampa Bay, with nothing to play for except for that, and, you know, playing against New Orleans, I guess, is somewhat meaningful. They could kick New Orleans out of the division title. I think you'll see Mike Evans out there for the entire game. And at 6,900, I mean, with him and Jameis, we've paid 8,400 for Evans in the past without thinking too hard about it. So I think that he just represents, he is a boom or bust guy in a lot of ways, but at 6,900, the boom is so significant that I think he's just a great play this week.
Yeah, dropped a couple of red zone looks last week. Had an offensive pass interference call on him where he sort of pushed off and probably should have caught the touchdown. And it's also just going to draw Marshawn Lattimore's shadow coverage. And I still like the price. I think you're right. The $6,900 price as compared to some of these other wide receivers strikes me as a deal. And I like that. That's a great piece about the narrative, because I think that that probably that definitely in NFL seasons that are so short and just kind of come and go so quickly. I agree with you that this stuff does really, really matter. Moving into Jacksonville and Tennessee, the big injury news here is whether or not DeMarco Murray is going to play, and then also whether it matters or not, like for Derrick Henry. So the question, so Tennessee is -3 favorites against the Jacksonville team. You can talk about the playoff implications here. If Murray weren't to play, though, it's still such a bad matchup. Like, I'm very confused about this because it doesn't seem like Murray should play because it seems really hurt. But I'm also like, would Henry even be a great play against the Jacksonville defense? How much is the defense going to be out there? Like, what are your thoughts on this game? Because this one really has me confused.
Yeah, I think Jacksonville is one of the strongest candidates to rest their starters this week and just rest people on both sides of the ball, especially in the second half, just because they're locked into the 3 seed. They're one of the few teams playing that's going to make the playoffs and is playing for absolutely nothing. That being said, like, how many backups do teams keep of their defensive players? I'm just not really sure. And like, defensive linemen and things aren't necessarily big injury risks from a game-to-game basis. So I think there are some factors that can make one feel concerned here, but I think if Murray sits, Henry was already sort of in a timeshare, and I think you probably see him get something like 20 carries per game. I mean, Tennessee wants to run the ball. They don't want to entrust Mariota completely, and if we're concerned about Jacksonville's defense, that starts with the secondary. So I think you'll see Murray get it, or rather Henry get a lot of carries here. I think, you know, he might be of middling effectiveness, but given that they have absolutely everything on the line trying to make the playoffs, I think that he'll just see a ton of usage. And I think for that reason, combined with the price, which is very cheap, $5,800 on FanDuel, I think you'll see big ownership, and I would be happy to play him in cash games as well.
Is Tennessee winning in? Like, do they control their fate completely? Do you know? Or I see that they're ranked right now 6th in the overall playoff seeding, and I'm just not positive if they hold their fate in their hands, like over like the Chargers and the Bills.
Yeah, I believe they are winning in, but again, that's not my real specialty, knowing all that kind of stuff. And I think that both the Chargers and the Bills do play on this 4 o'clock slate, so it doesn't really matter for our purposes.
All right, moving into the next game, which I'm not sure we're going to be talking for very long about, is KC and Denver. Denver -3.5 point favorites. Anything to like about this game? Any playoff implications? Anything to even target against? Denver's a good team. They're favorites. KC's on the road. Give me your thoughts here.
Yeah, KC locked into the division title and the 4 seed. They can't climb. They can't fall. And Denver's a great defense. Denver not playing for anything. I think this game is just a full-on skip. I mean, you can play CJ Anderson, I guess. I think I actually wrote him up. He was quite effective last week. You know, it is the last week of the season, and you do have a lot of good cheap running back options. So I don't know if that's a direction you need to go in. Arguably, last week was a better spot for him. He was quite effective from a fantasy perspective. Did get the 9 targets through the air, too. But we might see the return of Paxton Lynch. There's just a lot of question marks. I just don't know if this is the guy you need to invest $7,000 worth of salary on when you've got, like, Deion Lewis at $7,200.
Yeah, this game doesn't strike me as a game that I really want to target. I don't know. It's just, like, the total is incredibly low at 38. Neither of these teams, like you said with KC, they just have their own kind of locked in issues, and then Denver just sucks, so whatever. CJ Anderson is not the guy that I really want to play. Now, a game I really might be interested in here from one side of the ball is San Francisco going in and playing the Rams, and the Rams have already come out and said they're going to rest Goff and Gurley this week, so we're playing with at least backups, quarterback and running back for the Rams. The line shifted really dramatically, actually shifted all the way into San Francisco's favor here. That's thanks almost all the way to Jimmy Garoppolo. Do we have any interest in Garoppolo here? The Niners have something of a high total. Garoppolo's been very good. They've had nothing to play for weeks and have just been basically just running him out as a way to sell season tickets for next season. it's been really damn effective because he's looked really good. Do we have any interest in Garoppolo in a game where I think they're going to be pretty incentivized to just try to go out and win their last game?
Potentially. I mean, he's expensive. You're not getting Garoppolo on the cheap at $7,700. And I guess you'd be pretty happy with his performances the last couple of weeks, including a really tough matchup against Jacksonville. So I think Garoppolo is probably playable, as strange as it sounds. Obviously, you're taking on some level of risk playing anyone on a team with legit zero to play for. And the Rams, you know, they've been a pretty good defense this season, but they're openly throwing this game, it seems. So yeah, Garoppolo seems playable. Not really a guy I had thought very much about, to be honest, but I think you're making a pretty good case.
Yeah, like I said, like, you know, they fall into that category of haven't been playing for anything for a while, but except that they're just running him out there to see what they have. And it looks like they believe that, and they do have something really, really good. That's
my case. That's a nice call by you, by the way. I was very skeptical about that, but it's worked out pretty well.
That's my case for Garoppolo. And then on the Rams side of the ball, I don't think it's even worth to try to play the backups. You definitely can't play any of the receivers if they're not going to play Goff. And then if you thought you were going to
like kind of play halftime, it said Woods, Kupp, and the other guy. Sammy Watkins. Yeah, none of those guys are going to play at all.
If you're trying to catch lightning in a bottle on one of the running backs like Malcolm Brown or whoever they're going to throw out there, go for it. That's not a direction I think I'm going to go. Buffalo goes in and plays Miami. You mentioned before that there's some playoff implication stuff here for Buffalo on the road against the Dolphins. Where do you stand with guys like Shady here? Do you think he gets a ton of carries? Should we see like 20 plus touches, 25 touches out of their best player in a game they need to win?
I think so. I mean, he had 24 touches against Miami in their last meetup. He wasn't particularly effective on a yards per touch basis, but he did get the two touchdowns there, solidifying him, just continuing to solidify him as the goal line back. Got 22 touches against New England in a must-win game for them last week. I mean, they didn't win, but in a game that they were really hoping to win. I think you see 20-plus touches out of McCoy, hands down, and I think that he'll be a pretty popular cash game play this week as well.
Yeah, it's interesting. Miami's just not all that good of a team. It's still not like they're still not crazy favored for a team that for like one team needing to win and one team not needing to. So I know it's on the road. I guess it's probably more just about Buffalo just not being a dynamic offense in their own
Buffalo's
right.
Buffalo's a bad team. Let's be real. I mean, they're 8-7 this season, but they've got a negative 63 point differential. So like this is not a good team by any stretch. It's just that this is the way football works out sometimes. And, you know, Baltimore has a plus 96 point differential and they just have only one more win than Buffalo. Cause again, they only play 16 stupid games a season in this weird league. So that's pretty much it. They stink, but they've won more games than they lost. So that counts for something.
And then on Miami side, Kenyon Drake. I mean, Damian Williams is actually questionable to play this week, so I'm not sure where that would leave us with any of the Miami guys. Landry's a guy that we targeted in the past. Do you think they're – I mean, Vegas seems to think they're going to go out and at least put an effort in here, and I'm still not totally positive I want to target anyone from Miami.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much where I'm landing as well. I think they're all sort of playable. You know, Parker, for instance, has had a lot of target share the last couple of weeks, topping double digits in each of those weeks. Hasn't really turned it into great fantasy performance, but, you know, just sneaks in one touchdown. And either of those weeks, it becomes from okay to excellent. But yeah, just a GPP play for me there. Kenyon Drake, you know, it's kind of tough to figure out. He was having huge usage there for a couple of weeks, the New England game and then the Buffalo game, and then kind of tailed off a little bit against KC last week. But, you know, 20 plus fantasy points in each of the three prior weeks and pretty tough matchups. So I think definitely a playable guy for big tournaments. And again, not where I'm going to land for cash games.
Baltimore is playing at home against Cincinnati. They're minus 10 favorites right now. Baltimore has a pretty high team total here at 25. That's pretty high for them. I'm Cincinnati. It's probably a lot to do with motivation here and just what they plan on doing. A 25-point total for this team makes me feel like we should possibly be targeting something from them. Do you like anything with the run game here? I mean, even like a cheap Joe Flacco. I don't know. It seems crazy to even say. But they do strike. Are they a team that seems like they are in that top tier of motivation? And do we think we want to target any of their guys?
Yeah, I mean, we're not going to play Joe Flacco, but I think we can look at Alex Collins. But I think that's kind of where it stops for me. Collins has turned into the lead back. The differentiation between him and other running backs in terms of carries and just overall touches is going up. And that's a good sign for him. He's not been especially effective even when he has carried the ball. It's the only problem. I mean, outside of a few huge weeks against Pittsburgh and then Detroit the week before that, he's been more of a slow and steady guy. So, you know, not a whole lot to love there. That being said, Cincinnati has got to be just utterly demoralized at this point in the season. And you could just see Baltimore just going out and running early, Cincinnati kind of giving up and waiting for the game to end. So I think Collins is playable, but I'm not touching anyone else on this Baltimore team.
Yep, I think you can really firmly consider the Ravens defense here. Cincinnati only 15 implied points, which is one of the lowest of the entire day. We already know that Baltimore's a very good defense. It's hard to imagine Cincinnati mustering any kind of real fight at all. Vegas sure doesn't think so. And just even from a narrative perspective, they haven't really mustered much of a fight in general over the season. So do like the defense here. And I'm with you that I like Collins. I wish he was a little better, he will enter the running back discussion for us, I think, at some point in terms of cash games. Last game on the docket is Oakland going in and playing the Chargers. And obviously the big news we're waiting on here is Melvin Gordon. It really does not seem like he is going to play, but They have not, they probably are just dying to try to have him play because they kind of just need him. And it seems like they need to win.
Brandon Oliver would be the guy otherwise. And he's been horrendous in this opportunity in the past, but he's so cheap. I mean, he's the bare minimum on FanDuel. I think at 4,500, even with Oliver's track record and the last three games he's played, averaging the flat 1 yard per carry over 20 carries there. So that's not excellent by any stretch. He did convert three of his three targets into one catch for 2 yards. So I guess that puts him slightly ahead of the ball. But yeah, no, he's real bad. But at 4,500, you'd have to figure he would still get something like 15 carries. And God willing, they'd have to get something going, I would think. But man, he's just bad enough that even with the starting running back job, even in a game they utterly have to win, even with basically no competition since Gordon and Eckler would both be out, he'd still give me the shakes clicking the plus sign and submitting the lineup. So
I think he would be chalk, and I'm with you. It would feel not great. I mean, Gordon's even, they've struggled with the yards per carry just with a good running back, right? Like, so I don't know.
He would be like 80% owned, and I would be instantly jealous of all the 20% of people that were courageous enough not to play him. So
I think you're gonna make me laugh when I get out of here. Okay, I think we did a pretty good job here summing things up.
We got Keenan Allen's the only other guy you want to look at on the Chargers. Don't miss out on him, because he'll have high ownership in a game that the Chargers absolutely must win. So
that's actually it. He probably actually ends up becoming one of the highest floor wide receiver plays, especially if you think they need to win and they're just not going to be able to run the ball effectively, which it sure seems like that's just going to be the case. And Oakland 27th in the league against the pass in DVOA, so a really good matchup for the Chargers. We're just gonna have to wait on the Melvin Gordon news. All right, we're gonna get out of here. Week 17 in the books. We will be back again for a brief podcast going into playoff football, just probably once a week, as we just kind of break down some of those smaller slates. Thanks for listening. If you listen to us this entire season, really appreciate it. The numbers have gone up on our listens, and we really just appreciate the good vibes that we've had from the football podcast. So if you're not going to be with us for the playoffs, good luck. Good luck in week 17. Try to wade through all the mess. And if you want to just have our stance on it, just go sign up for that free 3-day trial at dfsr.com/NBA, and you'll see our projections kind of changing and fluctuating as we get into the weekend and just deal more with some of the news that's coming out. All right, buddy. Good football season in the books. I will talk to you for the playoffs, and for everyone else, be good.
Later, Gator. I need to pee.